So to welcome everybody to our Saturday night puja and reflections. Good time to unplug from the various engagements in the world, both figuratively and literally, to unplug ourselves from our devices, turn off the phones, turn off the watches, all the ways that we get ourselves distracted and involved in the world, just to set things aside for the time being, just to be with the present moment here, in communion with each other. I was listening to a talk of Ajahn Sucitto's the other day, and among various topics that he was reflecting on, he brought up the terms bhava and bhavana as coming from the same root, but with some different meanings, different inflections. Bhava being a word often translated as being or becoming, which is a word, the becoming translation is one that I tend to appreciate, versus bhavana, which is the word that's often used for cultivation, like mental cultivation of the cultivation of the practice. Bhava being usually what it is that we're involved with in our daily activities and our current and our regular mind state. Bhava becoming as controlled by the forces of desire and aversion and confusion. This constant process of becoming. Always moving into something, moving into some new experience, driven by the wish to get something pleasant or to get away from something unpleasant, or just being generally confused, getting lost in the world of appearances, always striving to move into something new, a new experience, to get born into a new world. Bhava and bhavana, cultivation, being a similar process of fabrication, creation, but with skillful intentions and with skillful means informing it. So bhavana, in the cultivation sense of the word, developing the paramis, the foundations of our practice, all the factors of the path. That lead one into being able to relinquish the bhava process, the process of becoming when it's informed by the processes of greed, hatred, and delusion. So, important distinction to be made in this process. What do we want to cultivate? We want to cultivate these very useful, very supportive mind states in order to let go of the unskillful ones. We want to cultivate the skillful, the wholesome, in the form of right effort, and abandon the unskillful, the unwholesome tendencies that we have. There's a kind of a framework of the teaching that the Buddha offers as a framework for this process of mental cultivation, the teaching or the reflection on the four bases of success that serves as a framework for how we can hold this process of mental cultivation. Many of you are familiar with it, the four stages of engagement in any kind of activity, contemplative activity, that we use. It's a teaching that the Buddha offered mostly in the scriptures as a way of developing certain mental powers of concentration and the development of certain qualities of psychic abilities, psychic powers, the full development of citta in that aspect. But has been applied and used in the teachings of the Thai forest tradition in a much more broad sense for establishing a template or a basis for success in any kind of Dhamma activity cultivation. And the four stages being Chanda, Virya, Chitta, Vimamsa. Chanda being the first stage of inspiration, wholesome desire to take up a practice, to take up a training. Virya, energy. Chitta, application of mind in this sense. And Vimamsa, the reviewing process. But it begins with this inspiration, this desire, this beginning of the waking up process that comes to people in many different ways. Sometimes there's just this natural inclination for exploration of how is it that I'm living my life? What is it that I'm doing? Why am I doing what I'm doing? What's this all about? I find myself caught in this whirlwind of activity, and sometimes I wonder how fruitful it is. So much of it seems kind of pointless. There's this awakening of interest into is there a different way of living a human life that perks this sense of inquiry, this sense of interest? Some of us come to it through the experience of dukkha, the experience of suffering. Sometimes people really have to experience a very difficult period of their lives before the wake-up call comes. So the experience of dukkha. Some people have probably cultivated a lot in past existences and have a natural inclination. Other people, it takes hard knocks to get us to wake up with and establish this sense of inquiry, this sense of interest. Is there a better way? Whatever the reason, though, any kind of successful practice, development of the practice begins with this initial interest, which then can flow into virya, a sense of energy, as Lungpa has been reflecting on in various venues, teachings, tea time discussions and talks. This is a viryavada, is how he's been referring to it, a doctrine or a path of energy. Virya being energy, sometimes also effort, which the word for effort in Pali, vayama, part of the Noble Eightfold Path, Samavayamo, very closely related, almost used interchangeably, energy and effort, virya, vayama. Energy being sort of the driving force behind right effort, but they go hand in hand. But this is a practice of energy. It's not one of just passivity. We have to take an active stance and an active application of mental energy to tread the path. It doesn't just descend upon us in a moment of grace. So based on this interest, this driving force that's motivating us, we develop this sense of energy, being very careful not to put it into strained kind of energy where we just become overwrought or over-applied, but one that's very consistent, very steady, and constantly reviewing what's happening, how we're spending our time, the attention that we're putting into what it is that we're practicing with. So this application of energy, very important. As a motivating force to then pick up some sort of investigation, the citta aspect of the four bases, the application of mind to some contemplation, some bhavana that will lead us in the direction that we're looking to go. There's a teaching that I find very useful. I've been contemplating it for the past couple of days. Again, it was Ajahn Suchito referenced it in the talk that I was listening to. And it's a lovely progression of reflections that take us all the way from an initial interest or initial application of one aspect of the practice through to its fruition. And the past several months, starting with the beginning of winter retreat, and up through even this month, a lot of the reflections, teachings that we've been offering, particularly spearheaded by Ajahn Janako's interest in returning to the basics, going back to basics in the practice, really emphasizing the fundamentals, particularly emphasizing the development of sila. And not to dismiss that in any way whatsoever as a foundation that you kind of establish and then you move on from it. But as a fully developing the parami, the perfection of sila, the purification of sila, the purification of virtue, it's not just a fundamental, but it can serve as the basis for a comprehensive path to liberation. And this particular teaching that I've been thinking and referring to in my practice starts with the practice, the sila, the aspect of sila. And the Buddha says, for one who has developed sila, developed virtue, there's no need for a volitional development or a volitional impulse to then realize the quality of non-regret, because non-regret naturally arises from a virtuous person, a virtuous frame of mind. For one who follows virtue, this quality of non-regret naturally arises. No need for making it a specific volitional motivation. And similarly on through a number of other qualities. For one who has experiencing non-regret, there is no need for a volition to experience the quality of pamoja, of gladness, of easefulness of mind to emerge. Pamoja or gladness, ease of mind, naturally results from the non-regret, the quality of non-regret. And similarly, with the quality of gladness, one need not have a volitional exertion to realize the quality of pitti, sometimes translated as rapture. For myself, I experience it not quite so grand as say the quality of rapture, but as a sense of delight and involvement with attention, close attention to, sort of enwrapped, it might be a good word for pitti, but the sense of delight that comes from the gladness of mind, all stemming from non-regret and virtuous conduct. So this sense of delight that then naturally also, without necessarily having to exert a volitional impulse, naturally results in a sense of settledness, pasadi, tranquility, that this process naturally moves into that sense of beginning to be gathered and composed just a much more settled, less bouncy kind of quality that then naturally evolves into sukha or a sense of happiness, contentment, pleasure, a very pleasurable ease of body and mind that then, without the need for a volitional, without intention, to slowly expand and evolve into samadhi, this composed state of heart, this composed state of mind that results naturally from settled contentment, happiness, and ease, expanding rather than contracting, say, onto a, you know, it's not like all of a sudden a reversal of the quality of mind to a very narrow focus. It's this continuing moving into and widening into a very still, collected, clear, knowing quality of samadhi that's based on this well-being. And that serves as a basis for the moving into more of a contemplative, insightful reflection of that results in knowledge and awareness of the way things are, which is so fundamental to the development of the insight into anicca, dukkha, anatta, this clarity of mind that will see all the activities of the body and the mind in a very different light than how we usually are involved with it. And that naturally unfolds into a sense of disenchantment and dispassion, the turning away from the illusionary aspects of how we usually live our lives. Now that we're able to see clearly, there becomes just a growing disenchantment, dispassion for the way we've been involved in the world, and then naturally culminating in the release of liberation. So I always appreciate this very natural flow, this gradual widening of these experiences based on each other, but starting from the basis in this example of just virtuous conduct. And when you're reflecting on this, when I've been reflecting on this, it's also really important not to try and rush this kind of opening, that it's based on not a strained kind of effort, not a strained kind of energy, virya, but one that's a very gentle but persistent application of energy. So to linger with these stages or steps or this gradual deepening, to linger along the way and not to feel like it needs to be rushed. So with this example of using virtue, sila, as the basis, not just to blithely say, okay, yeah, well, I follow the precepts. I've been acting in harmless ways, not speaking in harmful ways, not acting in harmful ways. So, let's go straight to samadhi, breathing, concentration, get into the nitty-gritty of it so that I can get a real concentrated mind and then let go into nibbana. But it just doesn't happen that way, at least for most of us. To step back and take it very gently and organically, and to linger with the recollection of what does it feel like? What is it really like to live a virtuous life? What does it feel like not to take life of any living being? What's the sense that arises in the heart on a real deep feeling level, or the aspect of being considerate of others in terms of how we deal with possessions, not taking things that aren't ours, and not taking advantage of people in a sensual way, not deceiving people for our own gain or for any reason. What does that feel like when I do that? And just to linger in that, not to dismiss it as just sort of a thing that I have to do, a set of rules codes of behavior that I need to adhere to, but to really see the effects of that and just be happy to be with that sense of well-being that comes through reflecting on the goodness that arises in the world from simply following these five precepts. The harmlessness that comes from that, the gentleness, the kindness, the safety that people feel when they're in your presence and they know that they are safe with you in your presence. When people come to the monastery, they feel that very strongly. It's a very strong sense of security, fearlessness that comes from people who are following precepts. And the relaxation, the ease of mind that comes from that. So dwell with that. Think about that. Make that an act of cultivation. And just stay with that as long as that feeling persists. Be with that. And let it evolve into that sense of non-regret. Let it open into that rather than having to push oneself into that recollection. And stay with that. Linger with that. What does it feel like not to have any remorse? Not to have the mind going back and constantly regretting things that it's done out of carelessness. You know, sometimes those will arise anyway from past memories, but not to make a meal out of it, but to reflect on the current presence of sila and the non-regret that comes from that. And how that moves into a sense of ease, delight, lingering each step of the way, this kind of settledness and tranquility of mind, the contentment, well-being that comes from that. Just to be content with staying with that, no need to go anywhere else, and let it evolve, settle into this collected state of mind, this deepening composure that is content with just staying right there. You know, the aspect of samadhi that's this kind of unwavering quality. The more it deepens, the more steady it becomes. And there's just no impulse arising to move into something else. The bhavana is moving into letting go of the bhava, the impulse to become, the impulse to move into something else starts to settle down in a very natural way. And to just hang out there with it, not to force it, not to feel like one has to get some samadhi, you know, to develop an intense focus of concentration in order to get something or to get somewhere. But just to allow it to naturally open into this wise foundation for clarity and investigation. And then allowing that reference point to slowly shift to this investigation of this body and this mind. Slowly turn the attention gently towards that contemplation of this body and the characteristics of transience, the characteristic of uncontrollability. This body is moving in its own particular trajectory. It's got its own independent life. It has its various functions, its different ways of biology and genetics, and it's following its own course. We don't need to try and take control or worry that we don't have control. It's just a natural aspect. This body has its own intelligence. So to use this easefulness, broad, open awareness quality of mind to gently look at what it is that we naturally assume to be ours, starting with the body. The Buddha has a really pithy teaching where he says, bhikkhus, abandon that which isn't yours. What is it that isn't yours? The body form is not yours. Abandon it. Feeling isn't yours. Abandon it. Perceptions aren't yours. Abandon them. Mental formations, thoughts, volitions aren't yours. Abandon them. Consciousness, sense consciousness isn't yours. Abandon it. Whatever it is that isn't yours, let it go. Relinquish it. So investigating in this clarity of mind comes naturally as we turn our attention towards the qualities of body and mind that are arising in any one moment, in this quiet state of alertness, attention. We investigate very carefully everything as it arises, as it passes away, and realize that there's no ultimate me who's in charge, who's in control. It's a very natural outflow. It doesn't have to be forced. It's just a slight adjustment of attention. And with that comes this knowledge and vision of the way things really are, this dropping of the illusion of self, of control, of solidity, of me and mine. This self-reference melts away. And when that's seen clearly with wisdom, the natural flow, it doesn't have to be forced, the natural flow is towards disenchantment. We're no longer enchanted by the illusion of self, the illusion of me and mine, the illusion of stability and permanence in that which is inherently unstable and changing. It's a natural quality. It's not a revulsion or a turning away from or a quality of aversion in terms of disenchantment or a bland indifference. It's a very wise letting go, turning away from, not enamored with anymore, outgrown the interest in a sense. And with that disenchantment, the flow is naturally towards this dispassion, this just don't want to go there anymore, don't need to go there anymore, don't need to involve myself in this process of becoming Bahawa. One can relinquish that. One can let go of that and move towards Nirodha, the cessation of becoming Bahawa Nirodha, based on this clear seeing. And then that allows one to eventually move into full and total knowledge and vision of liberation, complete liberation when the process is completed, which of course takes a lot of bhavana, a lot of mental cultivation over time. But just recollecting that it doesn't have to be a forced process, and we shouldn't try and force ourselves, you know, to move more quickly than is useful. That's just another process of bhava, wanting to rush things along to become something, to become liberated, to become concentrated, to become liberated. We don't need to rush that, but to just linger in these steps so that they naturally unfold, starting with the purest fundamental of reflection on sila. That's the perfectly fine basis for the development of the path to its fullest. Also, other qualities can be the beginning point of the process. Recollection of generosity, lingering again in the memories of generous acts and the effects that they have in the world. Gratitude, all the similar patience, you know, many of the perfections that we talk about, can be used as a basis for this development of ease, well-being, composure, reflection, and release. All of them can be used as a basis in our practice. And then taking it in the four bases of success to the last stage of Vimamsa review, we were talking about this at tea time a few nights ago. Someone brought up a question of, what techniques are you teaching these days? You're practicing and teaching. And talked a little bit about that, but really moved more back towards this importance of seeing for oneself and the process of reviewing whatever it is that you're doing and seeing how it works. That's more of a process that we teach here in this tradition rather than techniques specifically, but more of a process of how to develop a practice that seems interesting to you and useful and is in line with the Buddha's teachings, of course, but reviewing and seeing the effects of it for yourself. Then you become your own teacher if you develop this ability to evaluate the effects. So with a something like what I've just described that I've been working with recently, the setting back and saying, okay, well, when I take the time to dwell with this reflection, when I take the time to really sink into and linger with the internal effects of sila, of virtue, and let that flow through its natural process, what's the result of that? Is it resulting in wholesome states of mind? So far, I'm glad to say that yes, that has resulted in a very deep and useful state of mind, contemplation, and to just really let that be its own reinforcement. So you have to do that with anything that you pick up as a contemplative strategy. Always, after you've spent some time with it, say, okay, well, how's that working? And then that serves as a reinforcement. Or maybe you've picked up something in a slightly in slightly the wrong way, or you've applied it in a way that's not useful, and you learn from that too. So the quality of vimamsa is important in any successful endeavor of bhavana, mental cultivation. So I just found that instruction very useful, the differentiation between bhava and bhavana, and how this mental cultivation helps upend the constant process of becoming based on obstructive states of mind and turns it into a real useful, gentle, but very steady, very consistent application of energy in an unstrained but very directed way, using even the most fundamental parts of the practice as the basis for that development. So I think I'll just leave it there for tonight's reflection.